You're on.
Okay. Well, thank you again for everyone who's come, to visitors and the, and all of you as well. I really appreciate your support and being here. And as I tell you a little bit about my project. And yes, as you already said, it's going to be totally different to what we've just seen, but I am being coached to do a song at some point in my very sexy cold voice, so we'll see how that goes. So my final project title was What is Organizational Development from a Process Work Perspective? And it was an interview study using qualitative methods. I wanted to start just by showing you the descriptions that I wrote for this presentation, because they changed somewhat. I first wrote this one. In this project, I make suggestions about how we can define organizational development from a process work perspective based on the views of four participants I interviewed for the study. Areas such as what the ideas behind process work organizational development are, how is it done and where is it used, I covered in the final paper. So that was my first go at describing this. And then something took a hold of me and I thought, no, what is process-oriented OD? Do we know what it is? Can we define it? When is it work that we do, when is the work that we do with organizations pooed, and when is it something else? How do we do it? What is secret process work? Do steps of pooed exist? And on I go. So it's just like totally something else took over me. And in fact, this actually really mirrors an edge that I'm on at the moment. And that's partly why I wanted to bring it in right now, because I'm sort of coming out a little bit more in the sense of saying things or being in ways which aren't always as nice, I guess is the simplest way of putting it. Someone, my dear friend, said something about, don't be so careful. And just get into the pood of it, yeah. I mean, when you're like typing and writing, there's no way you can write all of that. So I don't particularly like pood, but I couldn't come up with anything better. So POD maybe or something. Food is good. Food. Yeah, it's getting the stick is the problem. Yeah, that's right. The other thing I wanted to say too is please feel free to interrupt, ask questions, comments, whatever along the way. That'd be great. Well, we'll see how you are. Okay, so this is this is to remind me to be a little less whatever, you know, to sing. I can't do it again. No. I could. It's all right. You'll see some more. So I'm going to talk about three things today. One is, why did I choose to do this project? Second is, what did I do? And then what did I find out? It's very clear. It's going to be very clear and very linear. Okay. Why did I do this? Here we go. When I first heard about the MSCOF, the MacFoc, I got totally excited by the program. I've been studying process work for a while, and a lot of what this program, you know, offered was exactly, you know, some of the things in process work that I could feel myself being drawn to. And actually, it was the OC part which I was really drawn to in the MSCOF part. And so when it actually, from my point of view, when we didn't have as much OC in it as I wanted, and then it disappeared from the name. I decided I needed to do something about that for myself. And that's probably, you know, where the project was born. Yeah, from that place. Yeah. And so what's my interest in the OC part? I worked in corporate organizations for 6 years, and I was an employee doing the 50-60 hour a week thing as an engineer. And after a while, at that stage I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I wasn't happy then, so I left. And after having left, I came across process work, and I had a sense that it had something really powerful and had something that was missing in organizations. And so that, you know, that's some of what's behind me. Also, as Errol said yesterday, I do have a desire to work with powerful individuals in the world, and as he also said, you know, that is a group process. But I do feel that organizations have such an impact on the environment and on society and all sorts of things that in the moment I feel drawn to work with them. I also know I have a social activist in the background. And social activist is one who wants people, particularly not at that level, to work on themselves a lot more and make decisions coming from that place. And, you know, and I guess I just have a sense that if they know themselves better, the decisions they're going to make are going to change radically as a result. I mean, some of them already are, but I guess that's some of the dreaming in the background. But then, you know, Barbara, your presentation inspired me to think, well, actually, maybe it's not so much the inner work that I'm wanting to do, but the next step would be for them to become participant facilitators, because the inner work, you know, is part of that. And now I'm working in organizations as consultant, and I'm sort of moving more from my technical engineering background into OD work. And my most recent workplace has been at a zinc mine up in Far North Queensland. And I just thought I'd show you just a few pictures of the place, because I've loved hearing about other people and getting to know you a little more outside. So the first thing is, this is how I'd go to work. My boots are fairly much the same, except that they would have steel in them for protection. I have to wear long sleeves so I can roll them down when I'm actually, you know, in a manufacturing setting. And then the rest is pretty casual. The one day that I did turn up with black, you know, pants on and a shirt, I had so many comments. People are obviously uncomfortable. So, you know, just, yeah, this is how I turn up to work, which suits me down to the ground. I'm much more comfortable like this. Of course, in other settings, it'd be different, but a lot of my work has been here in this sort of style, I guess. So this is, I'm going to have to move a little so I can see this. This is flying into the mine site, and you can see it's literally in the middle of nowhere. I don't know if you can make out the mine there. There's a couple of, there's some things working on the mine there. It's an open pit mine, yep. Open pit mine. So you can, I'm just getting used to this technology. So they dig the ore out and then they make piles around of the waste material. Far, far north Queensland, sort of near Weipa. It's not, just past Mount Isa. Yeah. So and because it's in the middle of nowhere, you have to fly in. So you go to the nearest site and then they will pick you up on a plane and fly you into work. And then you stay in this, it's like this little village which is being created in the middle of nowhere. You have a little room and they feed you and there's like gym facilities and those things. But it's fairly basic. And that's where, you know, the first time I went there I stayed for 5 weeks, which was intense. I can't do that again, but it, you know, most people would go in for anywhere between 8 days to 3 weeks, and they all work these rosters. They come in for 8 days, fly home for 6 days, come in for 8 days, fly home for 6 days, for example. Yeah, but a lot of people like it, you know, it becomes a lifestyle, the fly-in, fly-out lifestyle. But it's rough. It's rough. I found it quite lonely at the beginning until I got to know people. So this is at the airport. I just wanted to show you a little bit about, you know, sort of types of people that have just all arrived, and this person's in his work attire. Yeah. That's right. Oh, the question was whether the airport was just for the mine, and the answer is yes, yeah, yeah. This is then driving to the work site, so there's the mine, and then this thing is called a concentrator. It sort of takes the dirt and makes it into like a slurry, which is a little bit like a thick shake, and concentrating all of the zinc, and that then gets piped to the coast, so that it's like a two-step process, and that's where I was focusing my efforts with a team. Yeah, especially my efforts with the team who work in the concentrator. It's amazing. I mean, for anyone who, the pipe goes about 200 miles, and the difference in altitude, so it has a slight downslope, but it's only like 100 feet difference. So it's like incredibly gradual, and yet they manage to get this thick shakes type stuff all the way through from here to the coast. I don't know how they do it. About 300 kilometers. Yeah, so I forgot there's probably more kilometer people in here than miles people. Oh, sorry.
What about the people come in perhaps often for 8 days and then go home for six. Mm-hmm. So when you're working with them, does that mean the people you're working with actually is changing every 6 days?
Yeah, it's one of the problems, you know, working here. Often people aren't around, so you've really got to be careful about your scheduling. Yeah. I mean, the 8-6 roster is actually a nice one for them because it means that there are two people for each job. And so, you know, one person comes in for 8 days And then there's an overlap on the eighth day, which is the first day for the next person. So you have like an hour, a day to hand over, and then the second person picks up the job. So that's by far the most preferred option. Yeah.
Tricky to work with them.
Tricky to work with them, yeah. Yeah. Although, I mean, a lot of the management have a 5-2 roster, which is actually one of the most difficult ones. So they fly in on the Monday morning, fly out again on a Friday night, and are home with their families. But it's taxing on them, and I'll explain why in a minute, because. So just after I arrived, I connected with this Aboriginal family. These four kids were visiting their mother. They had like homestays, and it really helped me just arrive. Had a lovely time with them. The shifts start at 6 in the morning and go till 6 at night. And then at the other end of the day, they go from 6 at night to 6 in the morning. So it's two 12-hour shifts, which is pretty intense. It means you're getting up at 4:30 every morning, to be ready, have had breakfast, and then catch a bus to get into work. And that's why that 5-2 roster is difficult, because your body gets used to getting up at 4:30, then you go home to be with your family, you're up at 5:30 in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, everyone else is still asleep, and just as you're getting used to getting up again at 8 or 9 in the morning, you've got to catch the bus back in, I mean the plane back in again on the Monday, which is like at 5:30 in the morning. So it's harrowing. Yeah. So this is the sunrise, and this is a somewhat unclear picture of some more sunrise, but also it just shows some of the more technical bits of equipment. These are some of the pets they have. Can you see that? Right, maybe I'll just turn the lights down for a sec. Yeah. She's a pet, yeah. I mean, they have a strong environment section, and Bernie is from the environment section. And they seem to keep them for a while, and then they let them go before they get too used to being hand-fed and stuff. But I also wanted to show you again, because I know how curious I was before I worked in this place, is what we wear. So this is Jim, he was a colleague. So when we go out into the plant, we have to wear these visibility vests. And the people who work there all the time, you know, they wear these bright clothes constantly. Zinc, which is used, that you put it on steel, it's a galvanized steel, it stops it rusting. And so it's gone crazy at the moment because China is growing like crazy. So zinc used to cost something like $300 a ton, and it's now like $4,000 a ton in like a year. It's just gone through the roof, maybe 2 years. Because China is growing so much, they just desperately need materials. And yeah. All right, I'm going to have to speed up a tad. I love the air of the country as well. So just some closing photos just of the countryside, and there's a sunset. So that's a little of where I've been most recently working. So why did I choose this project? Oops, I'm going to go back. I've already spoken a little about the OC part and my sort of connection with that. And wanting to be like an OD consultant meant that I felt I needed to be a lot more comfortable with what it meant to be a consultant in this world. So that's one of the reasons I want to study it for my own learning. I also wanted to further the whole field, food, by documenting it, because there's very little documented about it at the moment. Likewise, through doing some research, so I've chosen to do certain type of research. What's it called? When it's quantitative or qualitative? I've had a mental blank. It's qualitative. But what's the overall term for that type of research? It doesn't really matter. Sorry? No, going up the other way. Doesn't matter, we'll get there. No, up. The other way. Sorry? It's a very, very basic. I can't. Well, as soon as I remember, you'll go, oh, yes. And likewise, to add to the academic and professional credibility of process work.
A food.
And yeah, all right, let me. You're all interested now. Must be fairly early on. Academic research. Thank you. So I wanted to do an academic research piece to do this, hoping, you know, the more, I think, I can say that out loud, all right, to add to academic and professional credibility of process work, yeah. Okay. I think you'd get another version of it. Those of you who know PowerPoint are totally not impressed, but those of you who don't, it's fun. All right, so that's why I chose to do the project. Move on now to what I did, what did I do, and then I'll finish up with that. So, first thing I did was I invited 7 people to be interviewees. So you remember it's a qualitative research interview study, something like that. And of those 7 people, 2 of them said no, they didn't feel that they were actually OD practitioners, so they declined. 1 person didn't have time, and 4 people said yes, and they were Leslie, Stephen and Max, and 1 person who prefers to remain anonymous, who I'll call Kerry, during this presentation. Sorry? Kerry in the office. I chose Kerry because it's a... In Australia, Kerry's a female name, and here it's like a male name, so I thought it was nice and would hide here. But you can see already, let me see, pseudonym, yeah, that's a better word, yeah. So, you know, at a high level, I invited faculty members, then I conducted interviews, did the interview analysis, and then synthesized the data into themes. But the whole invitation process in itself was very interesting. In part, as I was just saying, you know, some people wanted to be anonymous, and other people, it was really important that I credit them for their work. So, you know, they definitely wanted to be named for everything they said.
Why somebody would want to be anonymous?
Yeah. So the reason why, Elena just asked, you know, why would someone want to be anonymous? This is the reason why here. This is a developing area. People will be reading it for various reasons. It's not like a conclusive, definitive arena. Not able to stand behind things because we're learning as we go. So that gave that person freedom, you know, to say things without needing to be right, I guess, or look good, or any of those other things that can happen. Yeah. So, you know, on one hand, I have 1 person who wanted to be anonymous, another person who made it really clear that they wanted me to be very, like, honour their intellectual property. And then on top of that, at the end of the day, my task is to synthesize all of that information and do this. Well, you know, when I'm answering that question, what is POOD? This is what I understand POOD is based on what they say.
My camera's way over.
You might have this later on in your presentation, Heike, but how many hours did you spend with each of the interviewees?
1 hour.
That's it.
And it's a lot of information. You get a lot of information in 1 hour. Yeah. Okay. There were, thanks for asking, I would have forgotten to say that. There were 4 1-hour interviews. We'll go into a little bit more down the track, but yeah. You get an enormous amount of information in that time. No, it's structured out. Yeah, I'll look at that. So, you know, here I am finding myself, I need anonymity. I also need to give credit and I need to synthesize. And the resulting thing is a bit of a mess, but I do like it does sort of sort itself back out again. But it is, inside it's been a little bit of a tussle to try and work out how to do that. One thing I haven't mentioned yet is that I haven't started writing the paper yet. I've done a lot of the analysis and I'm still doing a bit of analysis. So you'll see that, you know, as a flavour as I'm making this presentation, a lot of these things are, you know, findings along the way. Things that I'm noticing along the way. I guess I say that now because I'm sure by the end of it this won't be as much of a dilemma as it is for me at my current, you know, stage of the process. And this is the other sort of little tricky part at this point of the project. It's like the catch-22 situation. If you're trying to work out what this thing is, who do you ask to find out what it is? Because somewhere you've got to find what it is if you know who you're going to ask. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Did you define it before you went to interview people?
I kept it pretty loose. I just asked people who I saw as process-oriented organizational development practitioners. Yeah, it wasn't defined very tightly at all.
But I'm thinking you must have had made some assumptions around it in order to even begin that process.
I guess in my own mind, I was thinking about people who were working more with organizations in the corporate sense of the world. Word rather, but as I got into this more, I realized, you know, I shifted my own thinking around that. Yeah. Okay.
And about the two people that said they weren't organizational development,
mm-hmm.
Was that interesting where they drew the line, why they said they wasn't?
Yes, and it, you know, if I had, that is, you know, that could be a whole area of study. You can actually find out a lot about what you're studying by looking at the outliers. It's not something that I've done. But at the end of the day, you know, by the time this project is finished, we might well actually say that those people could well have been included in the study, you know, once the definition is there. But while it's all loose, yeah, it's difficult to know. All right. So, just catch up. Okay, so invitations went out there. Four people said yes. I conducted the interviews. They were 1 hour each. And the questions. I did have structured questions. I had three major questions that I asked each of the people, and then, you know, other things come up and you explore them as they come up. And I'm just interested in just spending a few minutes asking you guys, what sort of questions would you ask? What sort of things are you interested in finding out about? Sure. I can take the mic if you want me to. Pass it around.
I'd be interested in what different practitioners found difficult,
mm-hmm.
and also the area of what different practitioners found worked really well and were quite excited about how process work really was helpful there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I'm just going to write some of these up.
You're jumping in without a mic.
Thanks. Do you want to? It might just speed things up a little. Thanks, Penny. So,
what Warrior said.
What is TROD?
And also, like, how they see process work being applied and the tweaking process of process work into organisations.
Ask that again.
How, if and how it needs to be tweaked.
Okay, before it can be applied?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I hear,
and also, I had the same question to you when you introduced why did you choose this question,
mm-hmm.
because I felt...
You mean this question? What is
the same question as, so what kind of myth? Why, you know, you introduced some... For me, the very CR type of answer, but why did you choose this topic? So I want to ask you more like a think word channel thing, or why did you choose this job, or why did you choose in essence level or dream on level, and what's your dream?
Mm-hmm.
What's happened?
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of thing. Oh, I also would like to ask you about this
too. Right.
But I didn't ask the first one.
Okay. Well, I'll answer quickly in the moment to say, you know, as I've actually been watching other people's presentations, what I've noticed is that I probably don't know that well enough yet in myself. So I can't answer you in the moment, Di. But I'm aware that I can't answer you in the moment.
But you did.
Yeah. I did say a little about, yeah. Did you want to?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind you that you said you
had a dreaming about working with organizations because they are powerful and they have a lot of influence on what might happen to the environment, what
mm-hmm.
might happen socioeconomically to a popular, you know, you said...
That's, yeah.
So the well-being of the world obviously mm-hmm. is a kind of a big dream in the
mm-hmm.
background.
Yeah, it definitely is. Thank you, Barbara, for reminding me. And I think I also feel like I'd like to get a little deeper with that. Yeah, because I know it's going to be very it can be very tiring work, so it's going to be really important to know, to really know that deeply. Yeah. Let's just take a few more. So,
just briefly, what kind of results do people get, and how do they sell themselves to the organization?
Mm-hmm.
And what are their expectations? And then what does the process-oriented organizational developer expect to be able to deliver? And in what time frame?
My question would be the competitors. What kind of competition we get, those people got, and how they differentiate it?
Competitors to the consultants or to the organization?
Right, in the consulting field.
Right.
Yeah.
So how they
differentiate it?
Okay, a little of what Errol was sort of saying yesterday, yeah. Just getting you back in order.
One more question?
Yep.
I would have asked, do you think there's an essential difference between working with a person and working mm-hmm. with an organization? Mm-hmm. Like, essential difference.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you for all those questions.
And Heike, if I make a question, so what brought you here?
This is what you would ask them?
What brought you here for the mining area? Yeah, what brought you here, and what brought you here at the mining area?
Yes, so maybe I can explain. So now what I'm about to do is I'm explaining how I did the project, and the next step is actually interviewing people. And to do the interviews, I had some set questions, what I asked them. And I've just been asking, what sort of questions would you ask? And you've just said, you would have asked the people, what brought you here? But it's a different track at the moment. Okay. So I'll keep going. And Di, if at the end I can tell you as well. Yeah.
I think I can ask the same question for
Professor. Yeah, that's right. So these are, let's see. First question I asked was, what sort of work do you do with organizations? It was like an introductory question to warm people up. And I was interested in things like what kind of organizations they work for, what are some of the presenting issues, how they define their role, those sort of things, and how long their work normally goes for. Then how would they define process-oriented OD? Simple as that. And what are the steps of process-oriented OD? And I know, when I was coming up with these questions, I had heaps and heaps as well, and I had to, narrow it down. But it'd be interesting, I won't do it right now, to see how much of an overlap there is. But I'm sure there'll be some overlap. And I think the other thing I found was that I got a lot of other answers anyway, so those might have been the things I was looking for, but I got a lot of other information along the way. Can I just do a check-in with you around the pace? Right. Good pace? Right. Yeah. Right. Till 5:30. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
There was just one question I didn't ask, which I was interested in.
Thank you for describing. Yeah.
I'd be interested to know what were their own personal edges in doing that work, if mm-hmm. if any, and mm-hmm. how they dealt with that.
Yep. And that certainly came up. I shouldn't answer, but yes, that was one of those things which wasn't one of the main three questions, but it definitely came up in all of the data that I got and that I'm honing in on as I do the analysis. Yeah. All right, so then came the task of transcribing these things, and that takes forever. Now, I'm a fairly fast typist. My best record time was getting 8 minutes of interview done in 1 hour.
Wow.
That was my best. Normally it took I managed to get 6 minutes done in an hour.
Wow.
It's incredible. It's really slow, and I can fairly much type. So that was, a process in itself, but it was a wonderful process because it got me quite intimately engaged with all of the material, because when you're actually the interviewee, there's a whole ream of things going on, and you can't always, be actually fully integrating what people are saying because you've got all these other hats you've got on. And I mentioned here as well the fact that, all the people I was interviewing are either my teachers or my therapists or those sort of things. teachers or therapists, you know, I guess I'm talking about the rank relationship, made it a little difficult for me as well, and that would be one of the limitations of this study. You know, there was times when I had my own edges to push a little deeper, and I didn't cross that edge. Other times I did, but there's, you know, that has definitely impacted the study, that relationship. So that was the transcription, and then came the analysis, and I won't go into this into too much detail, but basically what this methodology requires, and it has a very, you know, set process, is that you take all of the information and you chunk it into lots of little parts, and then you like organize the chunks into little piles. So you just sort of start looking through the chunks to see there's some patterns emerging, and you put them all into these little piles. And you imagine, I didn't do it on paper, I actually used Excel, but same sort of concept. I can imagine like a whole room full of piles of little bits of paper, and then you pick up the one pile of paper and have a look at it all, just looking at red roses, for example, instead of, you know, a garden. And then when you just look at all the red roses part, you get a lot more information than when it's all together. So that's the basic analysis process. You chunk it apart and then you sort of put it back together again.
Piles of poo.
Piles of poo? Of poo, yeah, piles of poo. I really was desperately trying to come up with another acronym, but here we go. And then the synthesis, synthesizing all of that information into themes. Which does nicely lead me onto my methodology. So this project is a qualitative interview study within the philosophical framework of interpretive inquiry using a generic approach to thematic analysis. And one of the things I needed to learn was what the hell all of that meant and how the hell to do all of that, you know? It's like, whoa. And I'll quickly give you an overview of that, but I'm keen actually to make sure I leave time for some of the findings. So I'll speed through it. All right, so it's academic research. That's the first thing. I'll go really fast. We can come back if there's more questions. It's qualitative research, which, and there's three parts to it, is the data itself, how you get the data. So the research design, yeah, and then how you analyze it. And I've done all three things using qualitative research as a guideline. So I've done the and rather than the or. So I got the qualitative data from interviews. There are other ways you can do it. The design itself, what I've got in yellow, they're capturing what people say in their own words is important at that point. And in terms of the analysis, I've already explained that to you, basically, you know, that pulling apart, putting together again part. So the other part, which is this philosophical framework of interpretive inquiry, it means, I'm going to have to read it, that qualitative researchers study things in their natural setting, attempting to make sense of or interpret phenomena in terms of the meanings people bring to them. So they're interested in how people themselves are experiencing or what meaning they put to their experience. Is that, yeah. So that was about that. And here we go again. So we've covered those three steps, and now I can go on to what did I actually find out. All right, let me just make sure I've got what I wanted to say. Okay, so I found out lots and lots and lots of information, and I can't share it all with you, much as excited as I am, because, you know, there's so much good stuff coming out of it, I just haven't got time, and also I don't even know it all yet. Middle of the analysis, so I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to, you know, just give you a little bit of a taste of it. The other thing too, I just wanted to say at this point is because I haven't finished the analysis, this isn't quite as tight. This presentation isn't quite as tight as the final paper will be in terms of giving credit, in terms of making sure the quotes are exactly right, those sort of things. But it'll start to give you an idea, you know, of where things are headed. So, what did I find out? I found out the answer to the research question, I think. I'm pretty certain I've got that information. And in particular, what the ideas are behind POID and how it's done. And then lots of other surprising and exciting things, some of which I caught in that more, what I call more sassy invitation. With the two things in yellow being probably the more linear, how do we define it, how do we do it, and then some of the other things coming out. And I'll go through all these things as we go. You know, I'll go through them one at a time. I also just need to say again that, and I say this to myself as much as you, that what I present here is based on the views of the four people that I interviewed. So it's not my views. I take their views and then I take my understanding of what they said and come back with this. So, do we know what it is? Can we define it? Quick show of hands. Do you think we know what POOD is? Yes, those who think we do? Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a few people think we can, some people don't know, yeah. Actually, let me just go back and slow down here. So, you know, I think I found that we can define it, but as it says in the latest MACF handbook, world work concepts and tools are just beginning to be used in systematic ways to organisations. So it's very much developing as well. I think I, you know, we can draw a line and say this is where we're at with it at the moment, but it's still developing. Okay. So what is organisational development from a process work perspective? This is what I've found so far. At a high level, it's about unfolding an organisation's process. There are many parallels between organisational development and personal development. And it's a new application of process work, not a new field of process work. This is one of... It means that in the same way that we've applied process work, say, to working with body symptoms, working with people who are in a coma, working with people in extreme states, we're now using it to work with people in organisations and organisations, rather than it being a whole new, So, I mean, a whole new field would suggest that it's, you know, it needs a whole lot of extra research, a whole lot of extra theories, but actually it's, you know, what Kerry's suggesting is that it's just a new application, and so we can just take what we already know from process work and use it in organisational development. And here's specifically what some of the people said, and I wanted to share, I'll read it out to you, so you don't need to try and read it. I did want to share a little bit of the words that the four people used, you know, in doing this. So Leslie said, POOD is the process of working with an organisation where you look at their strengths and what they do well, and you also look at the things that disturb them and take them away from their intention. And based on their culture and what they are willing to go along with, you find ways to help them integrate the things that disturb and marginalise them so they can be a more resilient organisation. Before I show you what Max said, Max had a little bit more to say than that, and he basically framed it in this way. He said that we have a big umbrella which is called process work. Under that big umbrella of process work is a smaller umbrella called world work, and under that umbrella of world work is another thing called, I call, POOD. That's sort of one way that he framed it. So what I call process-oriented organisational development is world work with for-profit and non-profit groups that are interested in becoming conscious with or working with who they are and where they want to go. It's nice, isn't it? Yeah. Kerry said process-oriented organisational development is using process-oriented methods to further the development of an organisation, which is, and it falls under the theoretical framework of world work, so there that comes up again. It's a primary process, a role that needs to be satisfied. It's got goals and agendas, and you look at what's troubling it, what the secondary process is, what are the roles that are ghost roles, and how can we help facilitate a better connection between those roles. That's quite very similar to what Leslie said, yeah. And then Stephen said, organisational development consulting is following the process of the organisation and helping it unfold into its next place. It includes a whole array of interventions, which I've grouped together here using a category proposed by some other organisational development theorists. Categorisation is not too important though. So it includes interventions such as interpersonal and group process interventions such as conflict resolution, team building development, basic group development work where we help a group get over an edge and deepening of interpersonal interactions, training and coaching. So none of it's, I say none of it's surprising, but it's nice to start to sort of get it down, you know? Yeah, yeah. Start to define some things. There are also techno-structural interventions, such as changing the organizational structure. One person spoke about doing that. Human resource management interventions, such as CR policies and diversity work. And strategic interventions, such as visioning or strategic development planning and mythic work. All the different things that people spoke about in their role as a practitioner of this. Okay. So if we move then on to the second point, when is the work that we do with organizationals pooed, and when is it something else? I found this was a really interesting discussion because, as Leslie said, she spoke about times when she's gone into an organization, it was like a performance. You go in once, you do something magical, you think you're going to help their problems, it's kind of dramatic, and then you're out of there. And so the whole question of is this organizational development or not was something that nearly, you know, I and the interviewees sort of wrestled with for a little while. And I don't know whether you'd say that is or isn't process organizational development. Just get you to.
I don't follow.
You don't follow?
No.
You don't follow why that wouldn't be, or you don't follow my question, or?
Well, your question, but I'm
development.
Well, that's what it comes down to, really. Yeah, what is development? Yeah. Yep.
Your point that in this quote, what Leslie says, there's no evidence that the organization has been developed. Isn't that your point, right?
Well, that's where we get to the
question
end.
Mark.
That's right. Yeah. That's really where the debate centered around what is and isn't development is what it came down to. So first we thought, you know, it might have something to do with time. Maybe it was a time thing if you just went in for an afternoon and left, that wasn't organizational development. But by the time, you know, we discussed it, development was seen as the key word, and this probably summarizes it best. It's basically assessing and designing interventions towards a particular goal. It's a degree to which your work is embedded in that larger goal that you're somehow a part of. So I guess there's a couple of things. Yes, there has to be a long-term development process, but you also need to be part of that long-term development process, or at least understand how your piece fits in, was one way we define that.
Didn't Max sort of use a different definition, saying something about organizational development has to do with an organization wanting to know itself or something like that? Rather than grow or change or develop, it has more to do with awareness, gaining a larger awareness rather than actually, I see development as a kind of a linear process. Knowing, I don't see it as linear. Do you see what I'm...
Yeah, I see the two different, like one is an awareness thing and one's a knowing, yeah. It's great, it's good for me, you know, to think about it as I keep working with this information. Okay, and the other thing, in terms of development then, how do you track whether the more linear development is actually happening? And in fact, it could maybe be awareness as well. Stephen talked about two things. One is you can track that through client feedback, and also by observing whether the organization is going over edges or not. And he said, you know, I'm interested in edge changes. In other words, when I go into an organization, I recognize the primary and secondary issues. And as the organization goes over the edge, you begin to feel palpably what starts to happen. The system begins to change. So he starts to, he measures development in the organization going over edges. Yeah. Moving then on to the third one. Do steps of process-oriented organizational development exist, or does this go against process-oriented thinking? This was a hot little topic, which I didn't ask again specifically, but you know it comes out when you're doing this sort of work. I don't know if you remember, but the questions themselves weren't process-oriented in nature, so that's sort of important to to know this. So already I was going in with a mind of someone who, of course, has a background in process work, but I wanted to, A, be able to, in the long term, write something for people who weren't necessarily in the community, and B, I wanted to see how people spoke about it in non-process work terms. So I came in quite, you know, purposefully without that process work paradigm in the background. I forgot to communicate this, though, to my interviewees, so it caused a little bit of, you know, some interesting discussions. Both Stephen and Kerry made the point that it's not possible to outline steps with process-oriented OD. As Kerry said, that's not how we talk about process work. However, I was hopeful I might find a pattern in what people were saying. So when I asked about the steps, I got people to think of, so that last question was, you know, what are the steps of process-oriented OD from when you first enter an organization to the end? What I, in the end, got people to do was just think about one case study and got them just to go through all the steps of when they started to when they finished. And then I was hoping to put all of this together and, you know, start to see whether there's a pattern or not. And I haven't finished that analysis. I've got to say that I think there are some patterns coming forward on one hand. On the other, four case studies isn't really enough to draw any conclusions from, and some of those were incomplete. So I think that would be, you know, some wonderful future research would be in that area of just getting some case studies and seeing whether there are some steps. What I did do, though, is with those case studies, I looked at those steps and then I saw whether I could group them into, again, four steps that are suggested by, it's in a book called Organizational Change and Development. I brought it, but I haven't got it here. And they suggest there are four steps: entering and contracting, diagnosing, where you collect data, analyze data, and feedback the data to the organization, planning and implementation, there's intervention, design process, and then the process of managing change, and then evaluating and institutionalizing, so how did it go and making it part of the way we do things. And I think, you know, from the data that I had, I could definitely see those things happening, that we do follow, at a very high level, we do follow those steps. Something we do a lot of is at this stage, which is the intervention stage. A lot of people spoke about interventions, and, you know, from my own experience of being taught, we talk a lot about interventions, probably less about these steps, if at all. And this is probably the area we do the least of at the moment, was what I saw, you know, in those four case studies. This being evaluating and institutionalizing for those listening in the background. Wally Cummins and someone. Wally, isn't it? Yeah. It's like a collation of all of, I guess it's trying to summarize process, summarize OD theory where it is at the moment. Yeah. Okay. So that answers, are there steps of POD? It's not a definite yes or no, but looks like there are some definite steps. How do we do it? How do we do process-oriented organizational development? That was definitely one of the questions. Now, I've got to say I'm sorry, but I can't actually answer that at this stage. There's just too much information that I need to continue analyzing. But what I have done is try to work out how on earth to actually get all of that information together to make it into something that we'll be able to track down the track. And I've come up with this way of doing it, which is basically I've split it into three levels. One is those four steps, the process of it. Then there's the actual interventions. So I guess I'm going from high level to low level to lower level. And the interventions generally come in at this stage, the planning implementation stage. And then the tools, some of the real how-to steps, how do we do this? And this could also be interventions at a lower level. Let me just finish now, yeah? And for each of them, I'm hoping to give some theory, both at a high level with details, and then some examples. So for each of these different ways, because just so much information that just getting a framework for putting it together was a step in itself.
It's a thought which may or may not be useful to you, but issues like the tools of how we identify and primary, secondary process, I would look at it that with process-oriented organizational development, that's also with diagnosing. We diagnose according to those tools, mm-hmm. So it doesn't just fit cleanly into the, like also our interventions, like well, the different categories that kind of are used in.
It's like a pyramid, really. So this is like the top of the pyramid, and then this is more below it, and then this is more below it again. So definitely there's a flow between all of them by design. Yeah, yeah. And that's just showing definite links between those two. And in fact, you know, the books I've been reading also spend quite a lot of time in here as well. It's not just us. Okay. In terms of tools, so there's a whole stack of them, and I thought I'd just focus on a couple of them. So identifying primary and secondary processes of an organization, using the client understanding of an issue as diagnostic, the meta skill of using a primary process on secondary things, and letting the process point to the intervention. I think, you know, we can clearly see how personal development and organizational development, just sort of the parallels between them. This could just as almost easily be, you know, talking about seeing one client as in a therapeutic relationship.
Are those four tools, Heike, were they consistent throughout the interviewees, or is that like more?
This is more
one-person slant, or
you know, some of them like identifying the primary and secondary process. Three out of the four would have spoken about.
Okay.
This diagnostic one specifically, probably only one person spoke about. The meta skills, a couple of people spoke about. So it's a combination.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I thought I'd just focus on two of them. The client understanding of an issue as diagnostic. So the client comes, the client has a presenting issue, and the client understanding of the issue itself is diagnostic, in the sense that it's not so much a description of what is, but a description of the edges and the structures and the roles and ghost roles of the client, organization, or individual.
It's the whole...
Hang on, that would be to say, in the way the client describes the problem is the whole structure.
That's right. And that is something which I can't say yet, but I suggest that something that process work can really, you know, bring to this whole field is that way of looking at that first, you know, interaction, for example. And then the meta skill of using what? I should go back to it?
No,
you read that already?
Yeah.
He just asked.
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm just going to hold that in one actually for a sec, so I might need to just tell you a little bit about that. So the example that I'm just going to show you is of a Leslie speaking about a multinational company she's working with, and they have a primary process being incredibly competitive. And they see themselves as the best in the market and have been there for a long, long, long time. And just at the moment, they're beginning to lose that number one status and sort of slipping to number two. So she says, this is an example. Sorry, guys. This is an example of an intervention. This is an example of an intervention. So in some of the words that she used with them, and I was really interested in just hearing, you know, the words being modeled, so that's why I put it here too. The numbers are showing that people are nipping at your heels. And to be really innovative, which is more secondary for them, you need to draw on the wisdom of everybody in this group. And sometimes that's not such an easy thing to do because people are a pain in the ass. You don't want to hear from people. So it's a small snippet of a longer quote, but basically she's using their primary process of being wanting to be competitive and applying the principle of deep in democracy, you know, with that meta skill. Oh, okay, almost there anyway. What is secret process work? This is something I got really excited about when it started coming up in the interviews. And again, I'm sorry I can't tell you right here and now, but if you read my paper, you'll find out. I can, yeah. And I should also say, of the four people I interviewed, no one actually called it secret process work, but when they were speaking about it, I just thought, you know, we'd spoken about it, and it just was, it's like step by step, this is how you do secret process work. So it was, yeah, it's Rosemary's trademark. So that was exciting, one of those things that came forward. And then Is it effective? And how is it being accepted in the mainstream? I'm sorry, we're out of time.
He's the edge.
No, I'm going to keep going. I mean, there's a few more minutes, but I'm almost at the end. Is it effective? So this is just, at this stage, an unsynthesized lot of comments. So Max and Stephen both said, yes, it's very effective. Leslie made the point that we never used to worry about its effectiveness. Stephen said, you can frame it as effective to the triple bottom line, not necessarily to finances. And Kerry...
Social,
environmental. Is that the third one? Social, financial, and environmental, I think, are the three.
Anyway, it's three dimensions of accounting as opposed to just one, which has to do with financial efficiency.
Mm-hmm. And Kerry made the point that OD itself doesn't know how to measure effectiveness. So, you know, some of these questions we're asking of process work, no one can actually answer anyway. Or is, you know, we're having struggles answering it. I guess you could say, yeah, it's not a cut and dry sort of answer.
And in the literature?
In the literature? There isn't, well, which literature? You mean OD literature? There may well be, I mean, Errol will be the person to ask here. I haven't done a lot of other literature research because I'm focusing on process work, so, yeah. But that's, I guess, Kerry has done a lot of reading in the literature and suggests that that's a struggle. In terms of acceptance in the mainstream, general feeling was there's just so many opportunities to do this work out in the world, like so many, that everyone's dying to learn more about process work. Anyone who's just been in touch with it just gets, you know, a feeling of that power and wants to know more. And that's a profound model. That's some of the sort of feedback that people, well, Stephen and Max both gave that particular, you know, feedback back. So it's, I just get totally excited at, you know, the thought of more and more of us doing more and more of this in the world.
Heike, so what's the definition of the mainstream in this context?
Great question, Dai, one that I won't be able to answer on the spot for you.
Isn't it just people that don't know process work paradigm?
So, Yelena, you're suggesting it's people who don't know process work paradigm. It could be, yeah. I haven't, it's one of those areas I haven't finished the analysis, so I couldn't honestly answer, you know, that question. Yep.
Just going back about the secret process work.
Yes.
When you had Leslie's situation, the quote, in a way, wasn't that a bit of an example?
I think
basically
you're right.
Just using mainstream language.
Yep.
And talking to what people's needs are.
Yep, I think so. Yeah, she certainly didn't say anything about primary process or secondary process. Exactly, that's good. Thanks, Ray.
I had a similar thought, just when you referenced Norrie and how we were, lots of us really quite taken with his use of language. And I actually would think that rather than secret process work, I actually think it's multilingual process work. And
right.
Like a diversity-aware process work that is able to self-reflect to the extent that it can translate itself.
Yeah.
Which has a different feeling to secret, which sounds like it's sort of a conversion process by going underground, as opposed
right.
to being very sophisticated, of, you know, a self-awareness, I mean, a self-reflection sophistication and a willingness to shift how you use, you know, the language mm-hmm. you use. So I just, that's
really
just occurred
nice.
To me, listening to you.
Yeah.
Colonizing
yeah.
the organization in your language.
You paste the organization's language, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I just want to support what Lee said. It feels much right just from working with organizations that don't understand it, this whole idea of mm-hmm. and my advisors that helped me, it's just really sophisticated. And that's when I woke up to really understanding process work is like, how do you bring it to someone that doesn't know the language? I like multilingual.
Yeah, it's good. And as I said, Nama before actually used the term secret process
yeah.
work. It's something that I've hung on to there.
I really like that you're exploring what that means. I think that's incredibly important for this ongoing work. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, it's really
That's great.
We're also running out of time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Penny, can you hold for a sec? Because I'm just about done. I'm just closing. You know, to say, yep, covered those three things. And that's what the project was about. Ta-da! Woo! I'm just getting some coaching. What further questions do you have? And Penny looked like she had one.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that it's more of a comment, a thought. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for such a stimulating presentation, and just so I'm so excited like to get to read your paper, and I feel like you actually are helping make that definition possible for the process work community, and to help translate that into, you know, so it can be applicable in the mainstream. But it just struck me that so many professions don't explain their frameworks. Like a doctor doesn't speak in anatomical language or mm-hmm. explain the whole biology of what's happening. But, you know, they're always using it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny.
Well, or if you're having a massage or something, the person doesn't tell you every single thing that they're doing and why they're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, this could easily become a group process, but I'm really excited. And I think as a group, the fact that we're now, it almost feels like, you know, we started with secret process work and now we're all actually buying into something else. So maybe it's you know, reflecting how we're, you know, how we're integrating it more and not seeing it in the same way. Yeah.
Well, the question I did have, well, actually, sorry, it's not a question. It's another comment, which Elena brought in and you referred to about the, I guess, like the interconnection between the levels when you spoke about the
mm-hmm.
steps.
Mm-hmm.
And you said they were interconnected, but mm-hmm. I'd be really fascinated in seeing how you work with that, because it seems to me that somehow those steps seemed quite categorized in ways that didn't allow for that interconnectedness.
Okay. Is that okay?
So anyway, be a conversation to have sometime.
Yeah.
I'd like to see your take on it.
Yeah.
Seeing as we're over time, I'm going to need.
Please.
Is it just one more question? Okay.
Just comment.
Okay.
As a role of the social activist role,
mm-hmm.
is of course there's a perspective to do secret process work, which is we have to compromise ourselves to use terms. But there's another perspective is to bring process work into mainstream without compromise anything. That's the perspective I have. Do you understand what I mean? Yeah, that's social activist role too. You know what I mean?
Is it different from what I was saying? No, it's a comment. Yeah, great. Great, yeah. Perfect.
All right, thank you very much, Heike.
Thanks, Barbara.